Medrash Agoda, beginning of this week's parasha, on the first pasuk in this week's parasha. This parasha starts off, Vayakel Moshe es kol hadas b'nei Yisrael. And Moshe gathered together the entire people. Vayema aleihem, and he said to them, Eila hadvorim asher tziva Hashem la'aseis oisam. Basically, Eila Advarim, these are the things asher tziva Hashem la'aseis oisam, which the Ribbono Shel'Olam commanded to do. In other words, Moshe Rabbeinu has just come down from Har Sinai. Right, there's been the interlude of the Chet HaEgel and destruction of the first Luchos and the creation of the second Luchos. But basically, he spent time with the Ribbono Shel Olam, and he's now coming down, he's now going to say over to Klal Yisrael, Advorim asher tziva Hashem la'aseis oisam, those things that the Ribbono Shel Olam told him on Har Sinai that he should say over to Klal Yisrael. What did the Ribbono Shel Olam tell Moshe Rabbeinu on Har Sinai to say over to Klal Yisrael? The entire Torah. So Bechura now should come the entire list of everything which is mentioned in the Torah. What does Moshe Rabbeinu tell them? Sheisis yomim tasam alocha, bayim ashri, yilachem kodesh shabbos shabbosim Hashem kol ha'isam boim alocha, yumos. Starts telling them alochas of Shabbos. So Moshe Rabbeinu picks out from everything which the Ribbono Shel Olam told him on Har Sinai, dafka the union of Shmiras Shabbos, and dafka Shabbos is the one thing that Moshe Rabbeinu tells them. So the Medrash seems to have a problem. It says in the pasuk Eilu Advarim, seems to imply everything, the entirety that the Ribbono Shel Olam told him on Har Sinai, and yet Lemaisa, all the Moshe Rabbeinu tells them over, is specifically the halachas of Shabbos. So the question which the Medrash seems to have is, why is it that specifically the halachas of Shabbos were told to them, and not other halachas? So there's a Medrash here, Medrash Agoda, and the Medrash says the following. Tovoy Eila Hadvorim, so the Eila Hadvorim in this pasuk, meaning the halachas of Shabbos, come, the techaper, and they are mechaper al amiris Eilu Elehecha Yisrael. It's a kapara for that which Klal Yisrael said in reference to the Egel, Eile Elehecha Yisrael. In other words, the Medrash seems to be assuming that the reason why Moshe Rabbeinu dafka told them over the halachas of Shabbos and didn't tell them over any of the other halachas that he was given on Har Sinai is because Shabbos acts as a kapara for the Chet HaEgel. And the question begs itself, what is the connection between Shabbos and the Chet HaEgel? And why is it that Shabbos should constitute a kapara for the Chet HaEgel? What's the connection between Shmiras Shabbos and the Chet HaEgel? In the parsha of Chet HaEgel, the Torah says the following. The Torah describes the scene, or sets the scene, when Moshe Rabbeinu comes down from Har Sinai and finds Klal Yisrael in the midst of the Chet of the Eagle. Vayifen, Moshe Rabbeinu turned, Vayered Moshe min ahor, and he came down from the mountain. And he was carrying in his hands the Shnei Luchis HaBris. Luchis these were luchais ksuvim mishnei evrehem. They were inscribed on both sides. Mizeh umizeh hem ksuvim. They were inscribed on one side and on the other side. Now, l'chura, that seems to be an unnecessary repetition. On the one hand, it says ksuvim mishnei evrehem, and on the other hand, it says umizeh umizeh hem ksuvim. In fact, there's a Brisker Rov, but the Brisker Rov is ma'irer on this point. And the Brisker Rov wants to say a word here that in connection with the Luchais, there were two Nisim in the Luchais. One Nes in the Luchais was that there were Isias, there were letters in the Luchais which B'derech HaTeva shouldn't have been able to exist, the Mem and the Samach. Because if you chisel out and you create a mem, then the letter mem won't be hanging on anything. It's an entirely circular, a final mem is an entirely circular ice, and so too a samach is an entirely circular ice. So the fact that there was a samach and a mem in the luchais, says the Gemara, constituted a nes. The other nes that existed in the luchais was that the luchais could be read from both sides. In other words, normally if you write on a piece of paper, if you read it from the other side, you get a mirror image. And the nest of the luchais was that you could read them from both sides. And the Brisker Rov wants to types that into the pasuk. He says, "Ksuvim mishnei evrayim," and then "Mizeh mizeh heim ksuvim." So "Mizeh mizeh heim ksuvim," shadow the mem and the samach. Right? He was in midair, and therefore looked like a mem and a samach on both sides. And ksuvim mishnei evrayim was that you didn't get the mirror image, but you could read it from both sides. And the Brisker Rov wants to touch up what's the difference between the two. So he says that the fact that you could read it from both sides, right, that was a nes, but it had nothing at all to do with the luchais. That was a nes in the ksav. Mashain came the fact that the letters were able to hang in midair, right, that's a nes in the luchais, right, they weren't attached to the luchais. He says that's the hemshech of the pasuk, v'aluchais maisa lekim heimo. V'hamichtov michtov eleikimhu chorus al haluchais. So he says there's two things. There's the fact that the luchais l'mayis eleikim is a din of the luchais, and then v'hamichtov michtov eleikim is a din of the ksav. It's two separate things. But al kaponim, the kasha, he's ma'ir already, that l'chura there's a superfluosity here in the pasuk, because it says ksuvim mishnei evrei mizeh mizeh hem ksuvim. The pasuk continues and says that the Yishma Yeshua es kol ha'om berei, that Yeshua heard the sound of the people that they were shouting. Vayemel Moshe kol mulchama b'machane, and he said to Moshe, it sounds to me that there's a battle going on here. There's a sound of mulchama going on here. Vayemel. And he said, "Ein koil anes gvura, ve'ein koil anes chalusha." I don't hear a sound of shouting, which is a strong sound of shouting. I don't hear a weak sound of shouting. Koil anus anechi shemer. I hear a sound which seems to be a sound of distress. When he saw the eagle, he saw them dancing around the eagle. Moshe got angry. He threw the luchais down from his hands. And he broke them at the foot of the mountain. That's the description that goes on here of what happened in the Chet HaEgel. Now we find a very interesting historical phenomena. The a few thousand years ago, was basically the first time that the independent rule of Jews in Eretz Yisrael was terminated. When did that happen? It happened on Shivasa B'Tammuz, at the time of the Churban Bayis Rishon, where Chazal tells us in Mishnah in Tainis and Daf Kafrod on the base, that on Shivasa B'Tammuz, Hufko Ha'ir, the Romans they managed to break into the city of Yerushalayim, managed to break through the walls of the city of Yerushalayim, and Yerushalayim was captured by the enemy. Yerushalayim being the capital, Yerushalayim being basically the political center of Jewish rule in Eretz Yisrael. 3 weeks later, on Tisha B'Av, the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, the Beis HaMikdash being the religious center of Klal Yisrael in Eretz Yisrael. And the question which Chazal ask is, why is it that the Churban of Jewish rule in Eretz Yisrael started dafke on Shivasa B'Tammuz, and why is it that the final destruction of the whole Jewish presence in Eretz Yisrael, including the religious center in Eretz Yisrael, namely the Beis HaMikdash, was on Tisha B'Av? In other words, why is it that this 3 week period was the period in which the entire rule of Jews here in Eretz Yisrael was destroyed? And we have a klal, and the klal is that there is no such thing as coincidence. The Torah tells us that there is no such thing as chance or coincidence. In Parshas B'chukosai it says, "Ve'im b'chukosai tim'asu," if you will become ma'us in my Torah, "ve'es mishpatai tigal nafshechem lebilti asis es kol ha'mitzvahs," and you will be disgusted by the mitzvahs and you will stop doing them, "v'halachtem imi bekeri," and you will think that things happen by chance, things happen by coincidence, and there is no response to actions on your part which are by design of the Ribbono Shel Olam, "v'halachti imochem b'chamas keri," "v'nasati es areichem chareva," I'll destroy your cities, "v'eschem ezra b'goyim," and I'll disperse you amongst the nations. Now along comes the Rambam in the first perek of Hilchos Taanis in Halacha Beis, and the Rambam says that the kavana of the Torah in these psukim is kloima, says the Rambam, "sha'avi aleichem tsara kedei shetoshuvu," that if you will start understanding events as if they are mikra, as if they just stand coincidence, stand by chance, "im taimu sheikeri aisiv lachem chamas aisekeri," I'll cause even further disruption, I'll cause worse things to happen to you, until you learn your lesson and you will understand that nothing happens by chance, nothing happens by coincidence, everything is by the design of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Therefore the fact that Bayis Rishon was destroyed on Tisha B'Av, and that the onset of the Churban was on Shivasa B'Tammuz when Hufka Ha'ir, is not just stum by chance. There was a reason for it. Even if you get into Taina, that the Yetzir, that the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash by Nebuchadnezzar, and the Kibush of Yerushalayim by Nebuchadnezzar was by chance that it happened in this particular period of time, you've got a problem with the Churban Bayis Sheni. Because 70 years after Churban Bayis Rishon, Klal Yisrael comes back from Bavel, led by Ezra and Zerubbabel, exactly in the way in which the Navi Yirmiyahu prophesized would happen at the time of the Churban Bayis Rishon, because at the time of Churban Bayis Rishon, Yirmiyahu HaNavi, Perek Kaftes, Pasuk Yud, in Yirmiyahu says, Koyam HaShem, that you will go down to Bavel, and you will be there in Golos 70 years, and then you will come back, and then the Beis HaMikdash will be rebuilt. And Zerubbabel, together with Ezra, rebuilt the second Beis HaMikdash. The second Beis HaMikdash stood for 400 years. Therefore, 470 years, La'acha Churban Bais Rishon, the second Beis HaMikdash is destroyed by Titus and his father, Vespasius, and who were both Caesars, right? They were both rulers of the Roman Empire. And again, exactly the same thing happens. Yerushalayim is conquered by Titus and Shivasa Batamas. That's when Hufkoir, that's when the walls in Yerushalayim are breached by Titus. And the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed on exactly the same date as the first Beis HaMikdash, on Tisha B'Av. Again, obviously by design. Obviously there's something going on here if exactly the same dates come into play. About 60 or 70 years after the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash by Titus, there was a revolution against the Roman rule in Eretz Yisrael. It was a very major revolution. The Jews prepared for this for 15 years. For 15 years, they prepared to revolt against the Romans. There were Jews living in Egypt, there were Jews living in Syria, there were Jews living in Cyprus, and there were Jews living in a number of other places as well. There was the Achar Churban Bayis Sheni. Jews got dispersed to a number of countries, but there were very large Jewish communities in Egypt, in Syria, and in Cyprus. And they got together, they sent messages to one another, and they decided that they're going to go out to war against the Roman Empire. They managed to put together an army of 400,000 soldiers. This army was under the leadership of Bar Kokhba. And they went out to war against the Romans. Both Chazal and the Roman historians, whose write-up of Mered Bar Kokhba exists until this very day, both of them talk about the amazing victories that Bar Kokhba had. At that time, the Roman who was in charge of Eretz Yisrael was a Roman general by the name of Ruth. And when this revolt broke out against the Romans, he basically failed to quell the revolt. He basically failed to put down the revolt. And without very much of an effort going on, the Jews managed to conquer fortress after fortress and city after city. And Chazal tell us that 50 fortresses and 985 cities fell into Jewish hands without much effort on the part of the Jews. And in fact, these figures, exactly the same figures, are recorded by a certain Roman historian of that period of time, Dien Kassay, who writes exactly the same thing, exactly the same numbers. The Romans saw that they were in a bad situation, so they sent in from Syria a army, with the Roman general at that point in time was located in Syria, and he didn't get anywhere at all. He was unsuccessful. So the Romans saw that the matter was bitter. So they called in a Roman general who happened to be at that time governing the British Isles, which was under Roman control at that time. His name happened to have been Julius Caesar. He had under his control four armies. 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 10th Roman legions. and he came to Eretz Yisrael. It's a whole story exactly how he managed to invade Eretz Yisrael. They came in through the back door, basically, and he managed to quell the rebellion. The main area where the main battle took place was round outside of Jerusalem, around a city called Beitar. And it took 52 battles for the Romans to conquer Beitar. In the end, they managed to conquer Beitar, and it was a Beitar, the Bar Kokhba himself was killed in the battle over Beitar. According to Roman historians, 850,000 Jews were killed in the battle of Beitar. According to the Rishalmi in Tinus, the Roman horses, the Rishalmi says, as they were advancing through Beitar, had to go through a quantity of Jewish blood that came up till the faces of the horses. Chazal obviously also understood that there was a huge slaughter that went on around about Beitar, and then we all know the Gemara in Gittin on Daphne Zion, the end of Amud Aleph Daphne Zion, where the Gemara talks about there, talks about the tragedy of the Nefila, of the fall of Beitar. What's interesting is that the Mishnah in Tainus says that Cholben Beisar was also Yudayim B'Tammuz until Tisha B'Av, when Beitar finally fell. We also know that around about 500 years ago, when Ferdinand, King of Spain, and his wife Isabel decided to kick the Jews out of Spain, the expulsion from Spain also took place in the weeks between Shavuot B'Tammuz and Tisha B'Av, and the final day of the expulsion from Spain, which the Abba Bunel says that on that day 400,000 Jews had to leave Spain, was, says the Barbanel, on Tisha B'Av. And if you want to go further, historians have already shown us that Gzeres Tadchatz was between Shavuot B'Tammuz and Tisha B'Av, invasion of Poland and various other things, beginning of the Second World War, took place between Shavuot B'Tammuz and Tisha B'Av. It's a pattern that goes through Jewish history. There's a pattern that goes through Jewish history that all the major catastrophes that happened to Klal Yisrael from Chulban Bayis Rishon till 50, 60 years ago all took place between Shavuot B'Tammuz and Tisha B'Av. And Chazal have this question. And Chazal asks, why is it that everything seems to happen round about this period of time? And Chazal says it's very simple, because there was a Matan Torah, and a Matan Torah, there was Kodesh Avrakim, there was Kodesh Hashem for Chazak Miyad, and Kodesh Hashem Medaber Mitoch HaEish, and the Rebbeinu Shlomo says, "Aleich Hashem Elokecha Asher Yetzeicha Me'etz Mitzrayim Beis Avodim, and Vayilecha Elohim Acherim Al Panai." And 40 days later, the Rebbeinu Shlomo says to Moshe Rabbeinu, "Leich Reid Ki Shachis Amcho Asher Elisim Eretz Mitzrayim." And 40 days later, Klal Yisrael have already made an eagle, and already 8 day Avodah Zarah. And Moshe Rabbeinu comes down, as we saw, comes near to the machane, sees the eagle, sees Klal Yisrael dancing around the eagle, Vayichas Moshe, Vayashlich Miyodov, and he throws down the luchos and he breaks the luchos. What day was that? Shavuot B'Tammuz. Ubayoyim pokti upakalti aleim chotosim. says Rashi, Ein Puroni is Bo Al Yisrael She'ein Bo Iksas Mi Piroin Oven Ha'ego. Any tragedy that comes upon Klal Yisrael is the Ribbono Shel Olam paying us back for the Chet Ha'ego. And Rashi is Be'etzem, just quoting a Gemara in Sanhedrin on Daf Kuf Beis Amud Aleph. Therefore, the greatest tragedies which happened to Klal Yisrael happened on Shivos HaBetamos, because all these tragedies are a hemshech of the Ribbono Shel Olam's reaction to Chet Ha'ego. B'Shivos HaBetamos, the Gemara says, Nishtabu Aluchais, u'B'Shivos HaBetamos Nivka Ha'ir. And everything flowed on from that. There's a very famous Maimon Chazal in Baba Basra and Daf Yudalel Amud Beis, where Chazal say that we know from the Torah that the Luchos were placed where? The Luchos were placed in the Orem. And Chazal in Baba Basra say that the Shivrei Luchos of the Luchos Rishonos Munachim Ba'Orem also had to be put into the Orem. So the Orem was an Eidus, right? The Orem was testimony. And if the Shivrei Luchos have to be put into the Orem, then the Shivrei Luchos are telling us something as well. In other words, the Shviris HaLuchos, which Moshe Rabbeinu broke, is coming to tell us something. And if we start thinking, we start analyzing, we'll see that the same Chet that was the essence of Chet HaEgel was the essence of the Chet which brought about Chorban HaBayis Rishon, the Etzem Chet which brought about Chorban HaBayis Sheni, Beitar, and right the way through Jewish history, it's the same Chet which keeps repeating itself. And because the Shviras HaLuchos, which was a response for the Chet HaEgel, was on Shivos HaBetamos, therefore all the responses from the Ribbono Shel Olam are always on Shivos HaBetamos or following Shivos HaBetamos, because it's all the same Chet which keeps on going on right the way through Jewish history. There's a Medrash. It's Chazal, it's not actually a Medrash, it's a Pirkei de Rabbi Elazar. The Pirkei de Rabbi Elazar says the following. The Pirkei de Rabbi Elazar says that mitchilo, initially, b'shor she'nosan HaKadosh Baruch Hu saluchos l'Moshe, when the Ribbono Shel Olam gave Moshe Rabbeinu the Luchos, ha'yusovlim es atzmon ve'es Moshe, they carried themselves and they carried Moshe. However, when Moshe Rabbeinu came down from the mountain, and when Moshe Rabbeinu saw Klal Yisrael had made an eagle and were dancing around the eagle, porach oisei ha'ksav me'al ha'luchos, the ksav on the Luchos flew away, v'nimtzu kvedim al yodav shel Moshe, and therefore the stones became too heavy for Moshe, and therefore v'yishaber oisem tachas ha'or, he dropped them and they broke. What does that mean? What does that medrash mean? So there's a hesber from Moshim Shefol Hirsch. Doesn't say it exactly in this way, but he says it more or less in this way. I'll just touch it in more contemporary language. But Moshim Shefol Hirsch explains in the following way. He says that two things are said about the Luchos. The same horror that the Biskarovs had. Luchis ksuvim mishnei avrayim. The Luchis were written on both sides. And it also says, mizeh u'mizeh hem ksuvim. What's the difference? So he says, a myriadic of all. He says, what do the Luchis look like? The Luchis were square. In other words, there were two blocks, two oblong blocks. That's what they were. None of this, you know, stupid things you see. Didn't look anything like that. Right? They were simply two squares. That's what they were. So how many sides did they have? They had eight sides. He says, that's the pshat in the pasuk, Luchos ksuvim mishnei avrayim. The ksav on the Luchos was on all the sides. It wasn't just on one side. It wasn't the way it looks in the film, that Moshe Rabbeinu came down with these two tablets, and on the front it was written the Aseret Dibros. No, it was written on top and on bottom and all the sides. Mishnei Avraham, that was Mishnei Avraham, doesn't mean literally two, it means from every side. Then the pasuk says something else as well. The pasuk says Mizehu Mizeh Ksuvim. Mizehu Mizeh says Hirosh means through and through. Not only was it written on all sides, but it went right the way through. In other words, if you would theoretically peel off one layer of the Ruches, you still find the Ksav there, and another layer of the Ruches, you still find the Ksav there. Because the Ksav went right the way through from all directions. The pasuk also says, when it talks about the creation of the Luchais, Luchais Evan, that they were Luchais of stone, Ksuvim Be'etz Balikim, that they were written with the finger of the Ribbono Shel Olam. So he says, what's the pshat? Luchais Evan, Ksuvim Be'etz Balikim. What does that mean? So he says the following. He says, the material from which the Luchais was made was stone. The nature of stone is that if you have stone and there's nothing stopping it and you drop it, it will fall to the earth. That is the nature of stone. Gravity will make it fall to the earth. Stone is heavy and therefore it will fall. The fact that the Luchais didn't fall, the fact that the Luchais were able to be in the air, was because they were ksuvim be'etzba elikim. Because the ksav on the Luchais was made by the etzba elikim. The Torah which was written, be'etzba elikim, that's what kept the Luchais so they shouldn't fall to the ground. So it comes out, says Hirsch, the Luchais weren't carrying the ksav, the other way around. The Ksav was carrying the Luchais. The Ksav was Etzbalikim. So the Ksav was that which was carrying the Luchais. Not the Luchais were carrying the Ksav. Parallel to that which Chazal say, that the Oren, Hayanoises Noisov, not that the people carrying the Oren carried the Oren, but the Oren carried the people with it. Therefore, Yodav Shel Moshe, Moshe's hands weren't carrying the Luchais. The Ksav, which was on the Luchais, was carrying the Luchais and carrying Moshe Rabbeinu. That's what Chazal say in the Midrash Tanchuma. Initially, when Moshe Rabbeinu came down from the mountain with the Luchais, HaLuchais HaYusayvlim Esatzmon Ves Moshe. The Luchais, the Ksav, in other words, were carrying the stone and carrying Moshe. Why? Because on the Luchais were the Ksav Elikim, and the Ksav Elikim was Etzba Elikim. But when Moshe Rabbeinu saw Klal Yisrael being chayten the Chet Ha'egel, Parach Eisei Ksav Me'aleihem, the Ksav went away. And the minute that the Ksav goes away, it remains Evan Tivi, natural stone. The natural stone falls to the ground. Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't strong enough to carry these stones. Says Shimon Shaval Hirsch, the Luchais are a message to Klal Yisrael, and the message which the Luchais give to Klal Yisrael is a very simple message. The message which the Luchais give to Klal Yisrael is, Al Piteva, there is absolutely no way in which anybody can explain the survival of Am Yisrael from Yitzis Mitzrayim Ad Etzem Hayom Hazeh. Right through the world's history, Jews were always a minority, Jews were always helpless, other nations had huge empires, other nations had control over the world, and other nations were constantly persecuting Jews. That's the history of the world. Am Yisrael started off as a nation without a government, without a land, without any allies, right? The wild group of people come out of Egypt, right? And they stand at Mount Sinai, and the Rebbe says, Va'yitzayim, you now become a nation. There are no trappings of what is a classic description of a nation. Nothing at all.
A nation has political leadership, a nation has a land, right? A nation has allies in order to survive. Nothing at all.
In other words, Alpiteva, there was absolutely no way in which Klal Yisrael could have existed. In the same way as the Evan, Alpiteva should fall to the ground, so too Klal Yisrael should have collapsed. However, Kolzman Klal Yisrael is being shamed Teruah Mitzvahs. Kolzman Klal Yisrael is aimed in the bris that Klal Yisrael has with the Ribbono Shel Olam by being shamed Mitzvahs Hashem. Then there's an ex-Balikim on Klal Yisrael. And if there's an ex-Balikim on Klal Yisrael, all the laws of nature are not applicable. In the same way as the ex-Balikim created the Metzias that the Evan was able to carry, that the Ksav was able to carry the Evan and carry Moshe Rabbeinu, who had been the ex-Balikim, the Torah, carries Klal Yisrael against all Chukei HaTeva. And therefore, Kolzman that Klal Yisrael is showing material mitzvahs, there's no need for Klal Yisrael to have a name, to have a land, there's no need for Klal Yisrael for diplomacy, there's no need for treaties, there's no need for government, there's nothing relevant at all. It's all working miraculously. Me'al HaTeva. The Pasuk says that the Ksav was Chorus al Haluchais, etched into the Luchais. Say Chazal, Atikre Chorus el Acherus. Chayrus min Amalchus, Chayrus min Malach HaMoves, Chayrus min HaYisurim. Kozman is the Ksav, Kozman is Teirin, is Me'al HaTeva. There's no Malach HaMoves, there's no Yisurim. There's nothing at all. There's no Malchus. Nothing. Everything works supernaturally. When Klal Yisrael made the Egel, what did they say? They said, Eilu, Eile, Elohecho Yisrael, Ashehelucho Mieretz Mitzrayim. Chazal ask, what's of Shav Ashehelucho, which is Loshen Rabbim? They made one Egel. So what's of Shehelucho Loshen Rabbim? So this is the Gemara, Shavu Lelihus Halbe. What does that mean? They didn't deny the existence of God. They didn't say God doesn't exist. All they said was God isn't enough. He created the heavens, he created the world, he created the earth, fine. But he needs some extra help as well. In other words, and the Kuzari talks about this at length, Ivul Elihus Halbe, says the Kuzari, is that they felt that there were in certain areas where they needed a different deity than the Ribbono Shel Olam. What does that mean? They didn't want a situation where the ksav on the luchas should be on all sides. They didn't want a situation where the ksav on the luchas should be through and through. So Shimshon of Olayosh, the tough kid of a Jew is that he has to be duch and duch. Through and through, he has to be committed to the Ribbono Shel Olam on all sides. You can't be a Jew in the Beis HaMedrash and be a goy outside of the Beis HaMedrash. It's a commitment which is in all aspects of life. It's a commitment whether you're in the Dalai Lama Shal Halacha or you're outside the Dalai Lama Shal Halacha. Wherever you are, it's the same. That they didn't want. There's a Mirika Rabbeinu Yonah. Rabbeinu Yonah says, the Pasuk says, the taivo yevakesh nifrod. The taivo always wants pirud, separation. So Rabbeinu, well, yeah, what's the pshat? No two people ever have the same yetzahara. Everybody's yetzahara is different. Even in the same area, the yetzahara is different, because yetzahara is a very personal thing. Everybody has their own vices. It can be in the same general topic, but you can't compare the Yetzirah of one person to the Yetzirah of another person. Taiva
unique to the individual. Shavu Leli Hus Halbe, says Rabbeinu Yemeir, when people want to follow their Yetzirah, when people want to follow their Taiva, they need Elohus Halbe. You can't have one God. You need a lot of them. Because everyone's got a different Taiva, therefore everyone needs his own deity to be able to follow it. The Yisrael Adovah says he or she is, that Kolzman, the Jew, is willing to accept the fact that the Ribbono Shel'Olam controls every single facet of his life, then the Jew functions supernaturally. But the minute the Jew starts limiting the Ribbono Shel'Olam to one area, then it starts working naturally. When it starts working naturally, Jews don't stand a chance. Chum Bayis Rishon. What was the Navi Yirmiyahu shouting at them at the time of Chum Bayis Rishon? Psukim after psukim after psukim of Yirmiyahu, and Navi says it's not enough to be a committed Jew in the Beis HaMikdash. What about outside of the Beis HaMikdash? What about in other areas? And the same was true in the Chulm Bayis Sheni, and the same has been true right the way through the history of Klal Yisrael to this very day. The Chet HaEgel, the fact that the Jew is always trying to limit the Ribbono Shel'Olam to certain areas, and he's not willing to allow the Ribbono Shel'Olam to take over in all areas, is all a product of the Chet HaEgel. It's all the same Chet, which is being chosen on itself and being chosen on itself and being chosen on itself. There's no such thing as 100% Jews. Jews are always 20% Jews, 30% Jews, 40%, sometimes it's 70% Jews. Sometimes you get Jews who are 90% Jews, but the 100% Jew isn't there. If the 100% Jew was there, the Mashiach would have come a long time ago already. Because there's always Lemechtzel, Levia, Leshlish. There's always areas where we want a different God. We don't want the Ribbono Shel'Olam. We want a particular able God. Then we can do what we want. Not pshat that we're ma'akiv the geula. Pshat is there's a Beis HaMikdash and we're being ma'akiv it. Why? Because again, we're not 100% Jews. There's one mitzvah in the Torah where the Torah says, you know what? I'm going to give a measuring rod. I'm giving every Jew a very simple measuring rod that he can work out for himself. Is he still tainted with the Chet HaEgel or is he not tainted with the Chet HaEgel? And that's Shabbos. What's the connection between Shabbos and the Chet HaEgel? What was the Chet of the Chet HaEgel? It was Ivui Le'elihus Halva. In other words, they didn't deny the Ribbono Shel'Olam. They wouldn't admit him in the Ribbono Shel'Olam. But only to a certain degree. They wanted that in certain areas the Ribbono Shel'Olam shouldn't, as it were, interfere. There they wanted something else. The whole concept of Shabbos is that there's one day in the week where the Jew is totally dependent upon the Ribbono Shel'Olam. That he has to be shovas v'yinofash, not only from melacha, not only from active work, not only the kilu, he's not allowed to do certain things, but there seems to be even a more prime point than the get to Shabbos. Chazal say, "Ata mekadish shesh Shabbos b'maychel u'b'mishta." The person has to be mekadish Shabbos b'maychel u'b'mishta, u'b'ksus nekiyo, u'mahanei es nafshecha. And you have to be mahane es nafshecha, ve'ani noisim echoschar. What does mahane es nafshecha mean?
Mahanes Nafshecha means the following: that a person has to enjoy the fact that on Shabbos he shavas from Malacha, and a person has to enjoy the whole concept of Shvisa and Menucha on Shabbos. He has to be magish a tanug and hano in the Shabbos. The minute that the Jew is waiting for Shabbos to go out, or the minute that the Jew is treating the Shabbos like a Yom Chol in any way whatsoever, then he's not being Mahane Esnafshe. Say Chazal, there was a Chet Ha'egel. The Chet Ha'egel needs a tikkun. There's something which is Metakan Chet Ha'egel. And what's that? Mitzvah Shabbos. Mitzvah Shabbos, Pshat Metakan Chet Ha'egel. It shows you where you're at. It shows you how much are you committed to the Ribbono Shel Olam. If your Shabbos is a 70% Shabbos, then you're a 70% Jew. If your Shabbos is an 80% Shabbos, then you're an 80% Jew. If you start Shabbos as late as possible and you finish Shabbos as early as possible, Shal is, you want a minimum amount of contact with the Ribbono Shel Olam, you want a minimum amount that the Ribbono Shel Olam should be your God, and you ovuladeus, you want other gods. The way in which a person can work out for himself how committed he is to the Ribbono Shel Olam is by looking at what his Shabbos looks like. In the 26 hours of Shabbos, how much of Shabbos was for the Ribbono Shel Olam, and how much of Shabbos was a Yom Chol for him? That tells him where he's at in terms of his yachas to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Chaim Friedlander, the Ponovich Mashgiach, Chaim Avracha, says a miracle of all. He says, Chazal say, Misha Torach Be'er Shabbos, Yechav B'Shabbos. Hastus, that somebody who's not Torach on Erev Shabbos can't be Eichel B'Shabbos. So in the same way as we say the Eilam Hazeh is a prosdo and Eilam Abo is a trakling, and the only way the person is going to be Nehneh from Eilam Abo is if he utilized this time in the prosdo. Me'ein Eilam Abo Yom Shabbos Menucha. Shabbos is the same thing. The only way a person can function that his Shabbos should be 100% Shabbos is if he's Torah Be'erev Shabbos. If his Erev Shabbos is an Erev Shabbos. But if his Erev Shabbos is not an Erev Shabbos, then his Shabbos won't be a Shabbos. Beshiber Soloveitchik in Boston says, one of his essays says a very sharp ha'ora. He says, we live in a world where we talk about Shomrei Shabbos and not Shomrei Shabbos. He's a Shabbos observer, he's not a Shabbos observer. He says it's true. But one thing's disappeared completely from the world: the Erev Shabbos observer. He says the concept that existed at one point in time of what an Erev Shabbos looked like by a Jew, he says that's disappeared completely. But Mishnah talk about Erev Shabbos, like Yechav B'Shabbos. If you're not Terech on Erev Shabbos, you're on Shabbos. You can't be 100% Jew with 100% Shabbos, right? If your Shabbos starts 15 minutes after Issa Malacha. That's not the way that Shabbos looked by Jews. That's not the way that Erev Shabbos looked by Jews. There was no Hichat Timsa 40 years ago, 30 years ago, 50 years ago. There was no Hichat Timsa Mechal of a Jew who did anything on Shabbos afternoon, right, other than Mikveh, Shnai Mikra Vechat Targum, and Shir Hashirim. That's what he spent his Friday afternoon doing. Because the whole concept of an Erev Shabbos was that it should be Achonet for Shabbos. And the whole concept of the Shabbos was that it should be Kulul Hashem. That was the concept of the Shabbos. But if you Erev Shabbos becomes, you know, Rav Chaska Sana, Rav Shiva, Zechon Yivracha, used to say always, every Yeshiva has one day Ben Azmanim a week. It's called Friday. But if that's what your Erev Shabbos looks like, then that's what your Shabbos looks like. And it's no Peletaka that Shabbos becomes a Yom Chol. So let's say that. So you want Mechal al Shabbos, Maniach, right? You want Mechal al Shabbos, you get the benefit of the doubt. But it still doesn't mean you shame the Shabbos. I was trying to, a guy locks himself in a telephone booth from Erev Shabbos to Motzi Shabbos. Can't move from there, right? Can't do anything. It's in a straitjacket from the beginning of Shabbos to the end of Shabbos. He hasn't been Mechal Shabbos. Has there been a Kiyum of Shabbos there? So, a person can go through a whole Shabbos and his Chal Shabbos can be a Shabbos Ulchal. Because it has nothing at all to do with Shabbos. He's on Hogan and Shabbos has nothing at all to do with Rebbeinu Shalom. He's on Hogan and Shabbos has nothing at all to do with the Inyan of being Mahanes Nafshecho. Mahanes Nafshecho, that's what it says in Chazal. Yeah, the Inyan Yachil on Shabbos, the Mishti on Shabbos. Gemara, Rashi, famous Rashi in Shabbos, Yisera, we all know that. Very nice. It's a prat in Shabbos. But what about the Mahanes Nafshecho? If a Shabbos meal turns right into an Irish wake, then it's not just a Shaychus in Shabbos, right? What's going to do with Shabbos? It's not Mahanes Nafshecho. It's Mahanes the Goyishka. It's Mahanes the evil lady who's Albert. It's going to Shaychus to Shabbos. Yeah, I've always got to listen. It's my birthday. It's this. It's that. Oh, 50 characters. The description of all here is that's the limud of the Eilu Advarim. The Eilu Advarim is that if we would use Shabbos in the proper way, that would be the tikkun for Chet Egel. As we made his movement, Amish Chazal say that if Klal Yisrael would only be Shemesh Shabbos, just a couple of Shabbosim, in the way that they should be, then we made the world come to tikkun. If the world would come to tikkun, then the Mashiach would come. Because that's what Shabbos is. It's the tikkun on the Chet Egel, which is the makor for all the Chorban that exists, and for the fact that Mashiach didn't come till today. This is the